Paul Douglas with Jordana Green and Dave Josephson. Hope your Wednesday is going well. I hope we don't ruin an otherwise nice Wednesday for you, but a couple of things.
Give us time. It's a three-hour show. We got plenty of time for that.
Yeah, good point.
We'll try to keep it positive.
It's been said, Jor, that we have the freedom to ignore coronavirus. There's a very good chance that coronavirus will not ignore us. We may be playing whack-a-mole with this thing until there's a vaccine. And some rather troubling developments. Yesterday, the United States reported 34,700 new cases of the virus. That's more than any time since April 24th, when there was a record 36,400 cases. So the numbers are spiking back up again. One of the state's hardest hit, Texas. Texas Governor Greg Abbott was one of the first governors to push for reopening. Here's what he told his residents.
Because the spread is so rampant right now, there's never a reason for you to have to leave your home unless you do need to go out. The safest place for you is at your home.
So basically, stay home unless you need to go out.
Okay. Stay home.
Which, not much ambiguity there, but there are other states. I found it interesting. We don't have sound. It would have made for a great soundbite. But Florida's Republican Senator Marco Rubio earlier today said, quote, everyone should just wear a damn mask.
Okay. Okay, so thought, there's that.
All right.
Yeah.
Succinct and to the point. Listen to this. Washington. Yeah. Jay Inslee is the governor of Washington, and everybody in the state of Washington now has to wear a face mask. If you don't, you will be charged with a misdemeanor crime. That's how serious they are taking this. Back to Texas, a Houston Children's Hospital, now admitting adults to cope with this sharp increase. And some people say, hey, it's just more testing and we're finding more cases. Some of that is true, of course, but you can't just look at the cases. You look at the hospitalization rates, and those are trending upward. And this time around, it is many younger people, people in their 20s and 30s, who are catching this thing. Just for perspective, Jor, the USA has a population of about 4 to 5% of the world's population, but we have about 25% of the world's coronavirus deaths. Mm-hmm. So it ain't over.
That's startling. That's startling.
A quarter of the world's deaths, 4 to 5% of the world's population. Mm-hmm. Well, it's not over, and this isn't going away as much as we would like to wish it away. So, anyway, I'm excited about the interview coming up. Who's coming on, Jor?
So excited. I tell you, today has been such a great day. It is called Share the Mic MN Day. And joining us in just a few moments is going to be Jasmine Stringer. And by the way, if you're following him on Instagram, Jasmine Stringer has taken over my Instagram to tell us about herself. We're also going to be joined by Reba Dominski from U.S. Bank, the money behind this new initiative. It's Share the Mic Day. We're back with Jasmine Stringer to share the mic next. It started this morning at 10 a.m., even earlier for some, where Jasmine Stringer and I did an Instagram live. Jasmine is an incredible local influencer. You see her all the time on WCCO TV. She does lifestyle brands. She does DIYs. Her career is to make you better and accomplish your goals. And one initiative that she's new to is Share the Mic MN. Share the Mic Now is a national organization where people who have influence relinquish their social media accounts, platforms like this one here on WCCO Radio, to people of color or other people in their community to give them a higher platform and amplify their voices. And Jasmine Stringer has brought that initiative here to Minnesota. Today is the inaugural day. Seven women in our community have shared their mics, whatever that is, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, this radio show here. And I am so honored and thrilled to have been able to be part of it. And it's still ongoing. I urge you right now, if you don't already, follow me at Instagram at Jordana Verde. V-E-R-D-E is green. And you will see what Jasmine Stringer has been posting all day. And then, of course, I want you to follow her at Carpe Diem. Search for her on Instagram and follow her as well. And I'm so thrilled to have Jasmine Stringer and Reba Dominski, who is the Executive Vice President of U.S. Bank and Chief Social Responsibility Officer, because she is the money behind this initiative. So Jasmine and Reba, welcome to the program.
Hi, Jordana. Thank you so much for having me on. And Reba, this afternoon, it's wonderful to talk to you. Hi, Reba.
Hello, Jasmine and Jordana. Well, thanks for having us on.
I'm really just so thrilled to have the both of you on. Jasmine, first of all, tell us a little bit about what you do and then why you brought Share the Mic to Minnesota.
So, you know, I say that I am on a mission to inspire others to live more authentic, connected, mindful lives. And I do that through my work as a public speaker, workshop facilitator, a lifestyle expert, and coach. So everything that I do should flow into that mission of inspiring others to live more connected, authentic, and mindful lives.
And you do that online, you do that on TV, you do that on all sorts of platforms. Yes, which is terrific.
I do workshops, I'm on television, I wrote a book, I'm working on another book. So a lot of different mediums. But I always make sure when someone asks me about a project or I'm submitting a proposal, how does this tie into that mission?
So tell us also, and then I want Paul to jump in here, tell us also why you brought and how you brought Share the Mic to Minnesota.
Yeah, so I brought Share the Mic to Minnesota because I had an experience where someone had mentioned me, Jason DeRusha from WCCO Television, just mentioned me during Blackout Tuesday, and it really positively affected my social media outgame, social media engagement, and my social media numbers. And then, as you know, we have been living in what we, Jordana, you and I are calling the new awakening time. And
yes.
I really was silent for a while and trying to process things because I was emotional. I was angry at times. I was confused at times. I was really just trying to figure it out. And then I realized that there was a power in my voice and the voice of other Black women in the state of Minnesota, and that we could use our voices and our stories to be a part of the solution. But we needed some ally partners to bring along. And so I had the experience with Jason. I had another mentor tell me she was going to start quoting me. Then I heard about Share the Mic Now, and I realized, wait a minute, we need to do this in Minnesota. And instead of waiting on someone to do it, I decided that I was going to do it. And this happened 12 days ago. And so 12 days ago, I woke up on a Friday morning, and I reached out to Amy Zara from Amy Zara Events, Jane Hagen Olsen from MSP Communications, and Alex Kaplan at Twin Cities Business Magazine, and pitched this idea to them and asked them what they thought. And they said, yes, I think it's viable. Do it, Jasmine. And then Saturday morning, I reached out to Reba and I said, Reba, I'm trying to run with this. Can the foundation help me?
This is such a fantastic idea. And this moment in time, this historic moment, this reawakening, this reckoning, whatever you want to call it, it just seems like there's no place for solos. This calls for a choir, right? Everybody raising their voices, amplifying their voices, and supporting each other. Jasmine, it's so awesome to have you on CCO Radio. And I want to ask Reba why she jumped in, why she got involved, and what responsibility, what obligation do corporations have during this unique moment in time?
Absolutely. Well, you know, Jasmine and I served on a leadership panel, a women's leadership panel at St. Kate's. Jasmine, I think it was a couple of years ago. And part of what we did on that panel, we shared our stories. And what Jasmine and I found in sharing our stories is we had so much in common. And so we stayed connected, primarily via social media. But, you know, listen to Jasmine. I just love what she's doing and what she represents. And so we just stayed connected. And, you know, a lot of philanthropies do what's called place-based investment. And we do that at U.S. Bank, putting a lot of resources into places to see if you can drive positive outcomes. But one of the things we're really thinking about is this idea of people-based philanthropy. And one of the people that we wanted to invest in was Jasmine. And she had this great idea. And I do think corporations have a responsibility for being part of that choir that you talked about. We need to make sure that we're using our platforms and all of the resources at our disposal, including financial and human resources, to support helping more people share their stories, amplifying the voices of those that are not always heard, and to amplify the great work that they're doing. So it was a great opportunity for me and for the organization to invest in Jasmine and invest in an idea, and corporations do need to do more of this.
Well, Reba and Jasmine, I'll tell you right now, it's blowing up on social media. I see it everywhere. People are reaching out to me and hopefully to Jasmine through my Insta about things that she's posting. Jasmine, who else is being amplified today, and where should people be going to get in on this?
So being amplified today, we have Dr. Joy Lewis, who is really centered on doing radical justice work, self-healing, self-care work. She's partnered with Nancy Lyons. We have Dara Beavis, who is the co-CEO and founder of Wise Inc. Publishing, and she's partnered with Amy Zara. We have Audra Robinson, who is launching her own business, a skincare and hair care line for Black girls, and she is partnered with Allie Kaplan. We have Nicole Jennings, the owner of One Posh Closet and Queen Anna's Boutique in the North Loop, and she's partnered with Gavin Kaysen. So we have seven pairs, but I make sure I went through everyone. And then, of course, I'm partnered with you. Oh, and I keep forgetting. And then we have Twyla Day partnered with Edina Magazine, and that's really thanks to a relationship I have with their managing editor, Angela Johnson.
Hey, that's what it's about. It's about relationship. And something that's so interesting about this, isn't about, yes, Reba, thank you for the money behind this, and we're so appreciative about this, but this is what Jasmine does to the core. This is making connections. This is telling stories. And it's using other people's connections and platforms to share those stories. So Jasmine, just briefly, I know we only have a few minutes left. What are some I know I want everybody to go on my Instagram and follow you at Carpe Diem and follow me at Jordana Verde so they see you today. But what is the story that you want to share today and get out today?
Well, I will say one thing. I'm Carpe Diem JBS, so my initials at the end of Carpe Diem, Carpe Diem JBS. One of the pairs that I forgot to mention, I think this is really important, is Representative Jean Poppe, one of our state representatives in the House, is partnered with Shaniqua Johnson, a phenomenal young lady in Worthington, Minnesota, because this is a statewide initiative, a statewide campaign. And I woke up to an amazing tweet from someone saying, gosh, I never thought I would see the day when Shaniqua Johnson is taking over Representative Jean Poppe's Twitter. And I thought that was really interesting. And so we're really building or being a bridge for communities that don't often connect but should be connecting, or people that don't often connect but should be connecting. I've said this 1,000 times today. Our stories are how we build connection. And so the more we get to understand each other, the more that we can be helpful and impactful in tackling these systemic issues.
I love it. Everything about that. Go ahead, Paul. I'm sorry. Jump in.
No, I was just going to ask Jasmine. Jasmine, do you think this time is different? I mean, it sure feels different. And well, I don't know. Please.
It's very interesting because my mom is here quarantining with me. And when everything happened, my mom was like, oh, my goodness, I was here in 1968, and I can't believe that we are at this moment again. Now, when you think about all of the other police misconduct issues that have happened, I think that, yes, this is a new awakening and that people are hungry and really desiring to fix the issue, but I don't want them to, you know, look at one issue. I keep saying that this is not a moment, this is a movement, and that this is a giant iceberg. And we don't, there's so many different layers that we're going to need people to be committed and consistent on doing the work required.
Jasmine, terrific day. I think it's been a huge success so far, and we still have many more hours in the day. Again, you can find Jasmine at Carpe Diem. Jasmine, is it BS? JBS?
JBS, correct.
Do we lose her, David? Oh, no.
No, I'm here. Can you hear me?
I think I lost her. Carpe Diem at JBS, at Carpe Diem JBS. That is her Instagram. Follow me at Jordana Verde. You will see all of her posts today. And we want to just give a big shout out to U.S. Bank, Reba Dominski, Executive Vice President and Chief Social Responsibility Officer. Just thank you so much for your support of this, because it's movements like this that get voices heard. And it is a beautiful thing. And once again, just honored. 100% honored to be part of it. So is she still there, David? Yeah.
Yep.
Jasmine, thank you.
Yeah. Hi. Thank you. And I want to just say thank you to Reba. I was telling her that this was a true.
Okay. Threat. I'm having some tech.
This is 13 days.
Okay. I think we're having some technical challenges here. Ladies, if you can still hear me, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate your time, and we are excited about this program, and we want updates. When we come back, I just signed up for an absentee voting ballot for me, and it took all of 5 minutes. When we come back, Minnesota Secretary of State Steve Simon joins us to talk about voting by mail. That's next. Paul and Jordana, Dave Josephson producing today, as he does every day for us, and we appreciate that. Hope your day is going well. Couldn't help but notice that in the 2016 presidential election, I think it was 59% of eligible voters actually turned out to vote. The Wall Street Journal reports that in 2016, 33 million people voted by mail. In the midterms, in 2018, nearly one in four votes was cast by mail. At a time when there's some question about, does voting by mail, you know, lead to fraud? Can we trust the numbers? Can we trust the outcomes? We wanted to get Minnesota Secretary of State Steve Simon to join us and answer some questions. Secretary, welcome back.
Thanks a lot for having me. Appreciate it.
And we have a very, it's great to have you here, Secretary, and we have a very unscientific poll right now on Twitter. And I wrote on Twitter, it took me all of 5 minutes to sign up to request an absentee ballot from the state of Minnesota. And I'm not exaggerating. It was 5 minutes. You need your driver's license number, and you need the last four of your social. You need to have a valid address, obviously. And then the state will get back to you within usually a few days to let you know if you are, in fact, eligible. How hard is that to hack, Steve?
You know, you never say never. Anything's possible, and I can't sit here and tell anyone there's never a possibility, but I don't know of a single example of that being hacked, ever. Certainly in Minnesota. I can't speak for other states. And there are always safeguards and ways around someone who tries to mess around with that system of absentee voting by mail. We usually hear of people who have questions about other kinds of potential, you know, wrongdoing. But in terms of hacking, someone going in and messing with the infrastructure, exceedingly rare. And I can't say impossible, but I don't know of a single example.
Steve, it's Jordana here. Now, President Trump tweeted a few days ago, and I know that you and I have talked about this in the past, but his tweet says this: rigged 2020 election. Millions of mail-in ballots will be printed by foreign countries and others. It will be the scandal of our times. And you tweeted back at the president and for all of us. Your tweet starts, totally false. And then you write, this kind of misinformation is dangerous. So share with us why that's dangerous and why this cannot happen.
Right. So the president asked a form of a question that other people ask. They don't make an allegation, but they ask, hey, what if, you know, someone intercepts this? Or what if you print fraudulent ballots? Or what if someone camps out by mailboxes knowing that a county or city is going to mail them on a certain day and they want to swipe 2 or 20 or 50 or 100 ballots so they can vote them all? You get all these ballots floating around there. Isn't that an invitation for fraud? The answer is, as Paul just alluded to in recounting his own experience, no, that thief will be foiled. So will the foreign government or anyone else who tries to print counterfeit ballots. And the reason is that unless the ballot is returned with the specific identifying information of the intended voter, the one that they provided when they did, as Paul did, and went online to mnvotes.org, unless they know the last four of your social or your driver's license, or the other workarounds that we have for folks who don't have one or both of those, unless they know that, their plot will be totally foiled. Those ballots will never be counted. They will be burned. They will be disposed of. There's no way they will be counted. And I did check, with our director of elections and with others in the counties and cities who have been doing this an awful lot longer than me, I said, can you think of an example? Do you know of an example where that has happened, either a counterfeit one or mailbox theft? And they said in their decades of doing this, they don't recall a single incident. That doesn't mean there wasn't one that escaped their notice. They just don't know of it.
Secretary, President Trump and the Attorney General Bill Barr say mail-in voting is going to lead to fraud, which I find fascinating since the president actually acknowledged that he did do remote voting, absentee voting from New York in 2018. From Mar-a-Lago from Florida this year, the First Lady Melania also has taken advantage of remote voting from Florida. Jared Kushner, the Vice President and his wife, voted via mail, the U.S. mail, as recently as April of this year. Do you think, and maybe you can't comment on this in an official capacity, but are they really worried about fraud, or is this an early attempt to cast doubt on the legitimacy of the general election in November?
Well, it might be some of each. And let me tell you what I think is part of what's going on here is there are two concepts that are being kind of smushed together, and they're very different. What the president originally said weeks and months ago that he didn't like was what's known as universal vote by mail, meaning everyone who's registered to vote automatically gets a ballot sent to them, whether they want to or not, ask for it or not, or whatever. And five states already do that. That's not what we're talking about here in Minnesota. We're talking about a different system where people simply use the U.S. mail to vote absentee, something we've had for decades and decades in Minnesota and in this country. And so those two things have somehow been combined to mean, in the president's mind, I take it, that any use of the U.S. mail to vote, whether it's at the voter's request or not, is somehow now in this category of things that he doesn't like. And so that's unfortunate because they're very different. We're doing one of those things. We're not doing the other.
I think your dog is pretty mad about this whole thing, too.
You're darn right she is.
She is. What's her name and what kind of dog is she?
That is Ruby. And Ruby is the Cavalier King Charles Spaniel.
Of course she
is.
Excuse Ruby's very rude interruption.
Are you kidding me? Paul has a King Charles. I used to have a King Charles. And you know my youngest is named. Well, you don't know that, Steve, but my youngest is named Ruby. So we love Ruby, and she can bark all she wants. Because you know what? We're pretty mad about this, too. And I think at the end, it goes back to like what Paul said in the beginning. The president's voting by mail. His family has voted by mail. And it's like, well, if it's good enough for you, why are you now saying because we do it, it's going to be fraudulent? And that is, it's bad, it's wrong, and it's, well, I don't know, it's just mean.
Yeah, I don't want people this idea of casting doubt on the results of the election preemptively before a single vote has been cast is really damaging and dangerous. And it's my job as Secretary of State. By the way, I don't care whether it's left, right, or center. It's my job to dispel those myths, to confront those rumors, to, replace those kinds of things with a fact about how the system works. There are other reasons people might not want to choose to vote that way. Maybe they just like going to the polling place, or they want that peace of mind of seeing the ballot being fed into the machine. That's okay. It's not mandatory. And by the way, anyone who goes to that website, it's mnvotes.org, mnvotes.org. As Paul said, 5 minutes, I would say, maximum. Not going to take a lot of your time. It's not an irreversible decision. You can change your mind. You could get the ballot and then say, you know what, I thought it was going to be a lot worse than it is in terms of COVID or anything else, and I don't want to do that. I want to go in on game day and I want to vote. That's perfectly acceptable. So you're not making some unalterable decision. You can still change your mind.
By the way, Secretary, and again, this is very unscientific and a small sample size, about 287 votes so far, and 2 out of 3 who took the time to respond to this Twitter poll said that they do plan to vote by mail, 66.9%. Yep. Again, I look at it as a convenience factor and also a safety factor, especially if you believe the epidemiologists who say this virus may still be going strong in November. Why would you expose yourself to any risk you don't have to? But there any last question? Is there any research that shows that voting by mail favors one political party over the other?
No. Rather, I should put it the other way. The available and very recent and thorough research shows the opposite. It's an absolute jump ball. There is no advantage to either party. Stanford just did a big study. They looked at places all over the country, and there is no advantage. There are just as many, fired-up Republicans as there are fired-up Democrats who do and would like to take advantage of this. And I would add, too, as you just said, Paul, the added advantage this year is isn't just about comfort and convenience. It's a public service. Every person who votes from home this year and goes to mnvotes.org and does that, every person is making it safer and easier at the polling place for those who do show up on game day. I'm referring not just to voters, but to the poll workers as well. So there are really two reasons, at least, to do it this year. It's mnvotes.org. I'm doing it. My wife's doing it, even though we love normally bringing our kids to the polling place, and I love the game day feel of Election Day. We're not going to do it this year.
I always feel better after talking to Secretary of State Simon. You sort of calm us down, put the voice of reason in us, because there's a lot of fear and there's a lot of misinformation out there coming from elected leaders like you. But I so appreciate you coming on today, Steve. Thank you.
My pleasure.
Thanks, Secretary.
Yeah, I think I'm going to do it too, Paul.
Yeah, why not? Why not? I don't see any negatives at this point. Anyway, when we come back, there will be baseball this summer. It may not be the season you were fantasizing about, but Mike Max brings us up to speed on a couple of very interesting rule changes this year. That's next. Paul and Jordana with DJ. On a Wednesday, it may not be everything you were fantasizing about a few months ago, but there will be baseball. 60-game sprint. Players reporting to Target Field July 1st. Looks like the game's starting up July 23rd. And a bevy of curious new rules. Some of them have been in the minor leagues for some time, but wanted Mike Max to come on and give us the latest. Hey, Maxie.
Hello, guys. Yeah, we're finally getting towards a place where we getting a clear picture on this, at least. And they've added some interesting intricacies and wrinkles that, if they work, this is a perfect year to do them. Then maybe going forward, you implement them, and many of them designed for either the health or to speed up the game. But 60 players can come to camp off the top. Obviously, you're not going to carry that many, but 60 players can be in camp if that's what you wish right away at Target Field in this case. And they still have a trade deadline for the end of August. So if you, about a month into the season, think you're either in it or not, you're going to have to make a quick decision because that's going to come really quick. The COVID testing. Well, so when you get to camp, they'll test everybody. Then, assuming that you test negative, you'll work out, and then you'll be tested every other day. So they'll be very much on top of this. The Philadelphia Phillies are the latest ones that have had some issues down there. 12 different people, players and non-player personnel, have tested positive. So they will be on top of that. What I haven't heard... when you get a situation like Philadelphia, what happens next when you have 12 people, that many, what happens, and what if it's the majority of your 25-man roster? Would they just bring players up and expect to fill out and play those games? I don't know. But the interesting thing here is they're going to put a guy on second base in extra innings to start the inning. It'll be the
yes.
guy that made the last out in the inning before, meaning it'll be easier to score a run and finish the game so that you don't have to tax your pitching staff and play, you know, 4.5-hour games. So that's
well, Wait. Back that up and explain that to me. They're changing the rules of baseball?
Yeah, and you don't see that often, Jordana, and that's why this
you
is
do
a
not?
Unique opportunity. These are things that would be considered radical by baseball standards. A guy on second base, you have
yeah.
to earn your way onto base. That's the whole premise of baseball. Now, in the minor leagues, they've done this. They put a guy on second base in extra innings. Now, the reason they do it in the minor leagues is because they're developing players. They're not worried so much about winning. And they don't want to ever hurt a guy's arm, blow his arm out while he's in the minor leagues that has a chance to make the big leagues. And that could happen if you play a long game, long into extra innings. So by putting a guy on second base, you enhance or increase his chances of scoring a run and the game ending that much sooner. So that's why they do this, so that you take take some of the pressure off your pitching staff and allow for these games to get over more quickly. But that, by baseball standards, that is that's kind of radical out there, you know. Here in both leagues. Here's the one, Jordana, that I think at first I thought problematic, but not. Non-baseball personnel in the field will wear a mask, okay? So that would be the coaches, the trainers that you see in the dugout, the guys out in the bullpen. And I thought, we got an issue here. But then the next line is no chewing tobacco and spitting. Because I thought, if you have a mask and you're chewing, you're going to have a problem.
Oh, gross. Yeah.
You could have all kinds of issues, but they took that off the table by eliminating chewing tobacco.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
But again, the length of the game, Maxie, that's more to limit the exposure of players around other players who may be sick, or is it speeding up the game to make it more palatable for the audience?
I guess I hadn't even thought about the exposure part of it, because Major League Baseball has long been trying to get into that 3-hour window consistently. So 3 hours or less, they think is about the right time for a game. And sometimes these go 3:45, they stretch out, you have pitching changes. So I hadn't thought about the exposure part of it, but I'm sure that's a side benefit as well. But they've been long looking for ways to keep the game moving and find a way to get people through it. You also get to bring three players on a taxi squad, so to speak, to the games, and one has to be a catcher, so that if you have a rash of injuries or something like that, you can activate some people. They're trying to just protect the health of guys and be able to have as many pieces in play. If you're the starting pitcher the next night, so you won't play that night, they want you sitting in the stands, not in the dugout. They're trying to, increase social distancing opportunity. Truth is, you can spread out the bullpen, the dugout, and guys can watch in the clubhouse as well. So you can do some things there. You've got some space to do it.
Mike Max, appreciate you. John Bolton,
thanks, Mike.
Up next.